prayer. I mean, I was, you know, one of the preachers here, which means that we were mostly concerned with giving this nice gift of Krishna consciousness to as many other people as possible, because we can see that it saved my life, and it can really do so, turning life from meaningless mess to something that is bright and makes sense, and where there is happiness and truth and all that life. And it's just so beautiful. The Gita and the Bhagavatam and the Hare Krishna, all of those, Japa Mala and Kirtans. So we want to give that to others and see them also become happy. And that's what Prabhupada wanted too. He didn't come to convert the Hinduism people or to make them join a cult or something like that and make money on them. Of course he wanted to see more devotees like that. But he said, even when he had like 400 or 500 disciples, that this is enough. Now we train those and they become teachers and preachers and teaching by their own example. It spreads from there. But then we took it, for some of us, more in the way of, yes, we're going to establish a religion here, like the Catholic Church, and the purpose of the preaching is to make devotees, recruit more members that can go out and collect for our grand, wonderful projects that I am in charge of. That kind of thing. Now what happened then was that, because these leaders, as you might hear, were not very qualified, and sometimes, yes, having all kinds of you could say material contaminations of greed and lust and envy and pride and all those things that we, of course, don't get rid of overnight. So to step into a big leadership position, being responsible for and in charge of people and money and all that, it's a great responsibility that takes, you know, education and character and all of that. It's not an easy thing to do. It's like here, managing a commercial rental building with 12 apartments. You need to know what you're doing in a fine area of Stockholm in Sweden. So, but we did the needful, yep. But the problem then, I'm just trying to analyze a little here. The problem that can appear, and that did appear, and that should not appear anymore, was that the person out there on top took water above his head, as we say in Sweden, took too much responsibility that they couldn't really live up to and fulfill. But then, of course, a certain ego slipped in, where we were taught that Vaishnavas are just the top of the society, or they're experts, they're the greatest, they know everything. So we don't need to learn from the karmis. So we invented our own ways of doing it. Now, what often happened, and that's where it became serious and why I am speaking like this, risking that you consider me critical, is that it can turn to Vaishnava aparad, meaning that, for example, here you are, you're in charge of a property that was bought by someone, developed by others, financed, collected for by others, devotees, often humble devotees out on the street, sacrificing everything for that great spiritual project, serving Prabhupada's mission and all that. But then, since that person in charge didn't know how to properly handle this, the problems appeared, and well, I dare say more often than not, it ended up in such a way that you had devotees suffering for that, either being exploited, not having proper living facilities, clothes, money, nothing, even families. And they had given up their educations and careers, no professional experience. When I stepped out of the temple, I was 44, and in the unemployment office, the first thing the lady there told me was, "You're too old to get a job." That's what I faced when I stepped out to start taking care of myself and my family, which I then, by Krishna's mercy, well, did my share of at least. So that was very educative. But you know, there you are, and you have surrendered souls working for your temple, for you, for free, for a little food, for some simple living facility, a little room sometimes just a bed with others in the same room. That was common in those days. When I was a temple president in Gothenburg, I had my own room, yes, in the basement. So I was a fine person, you know. The others, they lived 2 or 3 or so, Brahmacharya Ashram just down next to me together, which I also did before that. But well, you can read about New Vrindavan, you can read about this and that project. I don't think it's possible for anyone, except for remaining ignorant and closing eyes and ears and everything, to not see how devotees did not fare well. And if you can't see it, then look at the second generation. How did they fare in the Gurukuls and all that? So all of these, and I would say the big problem is that sometimes these are not acknowledged, they are not seen even, because devotees are not allowing themselves to see it. They are trained to think that our leaders are great, and it's all, we serve them, we serve Prabhupada, and it's all very beautiful and wonderful, and yes, why are you criticizing? But then you see a devotee suffering. And now, yeah, I won't say any practical examples, but I can give a lot of them. Of devotees being, you know, who gave the best years of their lives to serve ISKCON here in Sweden, where I am. And who then, when they couldn't be there, you know, contributing, serving, or donating, or whatever, they're just forgotten about. It's as if they're not devotees anymore. And some, they leave the world alone, in some old age home somewhere. So I think that the solution, and I really, really believe that this is one, if not the main thing, that has kept ISKCON from flourishing and blooming. Because Vaishnava apparat treating other devotees badly, and it's not just about coming up and saying nasty things, but it's also to mistreat. Even seeing some other person suffer and not doing anything about it is not considered very ethically well developed. So, what to speak of devotees seeing other devotees suffering, being unhappy because they are mistreated, and not doing anything about it, still supporting the leaders. Why? Because if I support the leader, then the leader will be merciful to me and I will get what I need and he will not work against me. You see, I mean, yes, there were even some old gangsters that came to the ISKCON movement back in the days, and sometimes we find a little bit of that. And I'm not saying they are gangsters, but that kind of primitive, street smart ways of doing things, of leading. If you are you my man or not? If you're not, then well, there may be problems for you. And if you're one of my guys, then you might find some benefits coming into your way. I've seen that. I even heard it expressed in different ways. So we need to clean out that. And I would say the formula, the mantra, is what Krishna says. One who calls himself my devotee is not my devotee, but one who calls himself devotee or my devotee is my devotee. Yes. Suck on that one and let that guide us, all of us, me included, that from now on, let us do that. First of all, serve the devotees, the Vaishnavas. And I'm not talking about artificial show bottle, whatever you want to call it. Now I'm going to serve you and I'm going to look here, I'm offering you incense or I'm doing this ritualistic. But to actually care for each other, treat each other well, and if we are in a leadership position, first of all, make sure the devotees are happy. Just like when you are ruling a country, first of all, make the citizens happy, protected, satisfied, their needs fulfilled. Rather than making big political campaign or building big buildings to show how great you are and how great your country is, as an external manifestation and show. We sometimes did that. So I would say, at least for me, and I think for others, our experience here, for instance, in New Brahmakund, a house where devotees have their homes. I mean, I've lived, had homes here for, my home here for 25 years, my apartment. And others too, but some they moved away because the house wasn't renovated. It was suffering. So all I say here is, as an old man talking to the leaders, the current leaders, offer them to move back again and live in their apartments, now renovated to proper Swedish, simple but clean and wholesome standard, so they can live together with other devotees, which is what devotees want to do, sadhu sangha. So yeah, we have this foundation here, stiftelse, the idea which, well, some of us have suggested, call it seva. And we can talk about that later on, but it's meant to do that, to serve the Vaishnavas very practically by providing homes and job opportunities. Jobs, you know, that is ultimately serving the Sankirtan mission, the Gaudiya mission, and more about that in the next episode here.